on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. Going right to the front lines of history in the making. There was a lot of it made. There was a lot of it made. Well, let's just start. It's a big announcement happened over the weekend. Big announcement. The Republican National Committee is coming to Milwaukee. The Republican National Convention with the Republican National Committee are coming to Milwaukee in the summer of 2024. Demonstrations are threatened. I want to dig down in this. I want to dig down deep in this because I think this is good for Milwaukee and it's good for the state of Wisconsin. Milwaukee is the economic engine that runs Wisconsin's economy in many respects. And people say, Matt, how can you say that? I can say that because Milwaukee County sends about $400 million a year more in tax revenue to Madison than it gets back. Everybody's under the impression that somehow Milwaukee's being subsidized. It's quite the opposite. And we're happy to do it. We're happy to do it. But Milwaukee depends on a lot of different businesses, not just the big boys, not just the Miller Brewings, and not just the Johnson Controls and Baird and Northwest Mutual Life and all that. It also depends on hotels, restaurants, tourism. You know, you think of tourism going up north in Wisconsin, and it does, and west everywhere, and it should. There's a ton of tourism that comes to Milwaukee. And the people that run these hotels, that run these restaurants, they have to pay people. They have to pay people to make the beds, cook the food, wash the dishes. They've got to pay for all of the infrastructure that supports that economy. The Republican National Convention, just like the Democratic National Convention, is estimated to bring in over $200 million in economic activity. You will not be able to find a hotel room between Milwaukee and Madison to the west, Milwaukee and O'Hare Airport, believe it or not, to the south, Milwaukee to Sheboygan in the north. Every little motel, every small hotel, every B&B is going to be gobbled up. And this is great. This is great news. It's great news for restaurants. What happens with a lot of these conventions is somebody will come in, some donor, some group, they'll take the whole restaurant for the evening, pay top dollar for it. It's terrific. People are going to get paid. It's all great. Now, what is the countervailing consideration? Why do people say, yeah, but? Yeah, but. Well, I'll tell you why. What is going to be said at this Republican convention in part will be toxic. Why do I say in part will be toxic? Well, because Liz Cheney will have something to say and Adam Kinzinger, and even if they don't let him on the podium, they'll all be interviewed on national press and on Milwaukee media and on statewide press. Every TV station, radio station in the state is either going to have somebody here in Milwaukee or have a feed that picks up Milwaukee. The other thing is this convention is going to be watched on television around the world, around the world. And when it's watched around the world, they're going to see Milwaukee. They're going to see Wisconsin. They're going to see promos on the history of Wisconsin. They're going to see promos on the greatness of our state, the cleanliness of our state, the cleanliness of our politics, the cleanliness of our economy. It's going to be great. That's why it's important that we have three big league athletic teams in Wisconsin. When I say big league, I know we have some minor league teams too, but I'm talking about the Packers, the Bucks, and the Brewers. Every time they play a game, the word Milwaukee is mentioned, or Green Bay, or Wisconsin is mentioned. And this is all terrific stuff. It's very, very important. Very important. So What about the demonstrations? Demonstrations are healthy. There'll be plenty of them. I suspect there'll be a perimeter put around, and there'll be metal detectors, which there should be, at some distance from the convention site put around, and there should be. But let's keep these protests nonviolent. Now, I can only speak for the people who would listen to me. The Proud Boys are not going to listen to me. The Boogaloo are not going to listen to me. Neither are the Oath Keepers and neither are the Three Percenters. I know that. And they may come in. I know that. They may demonstrate or they may try to cause trouble. Cause trouble with the Black Lives Matter demonstrators and many other demonstrators in the state who are peaceful and whose message has to be heard. The point is, democracy is not neat and tidy. Democracy is sloppy, but you can't let democracy become violent. In 1968 in Chicago, remember that convention? The height of the Vietnam War, there were tensions very high over the Vietnam War. And there was violence. And there was police overreaction. And it spilled out onto the convention floor. And it aired on television around the world. And it was one reason why Hubert Humphrey did not win the election that year against Richard Nixon. Hubert Humphrey only lost the election by 300,000 popular vote. 300,000. People looked at it. They'd already had two assassinations, Bobby Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King. They had the assassination of Jack Kennedy less than 5 years before. They had the Vietnam War. And they wanted some respite from that. And sadly, they thought they were going to get it with Richard Nixon, who then turned up resigning from office just after he was elected to his second term on the promise that he would be pardoned by Gerald Ford, his vice president. It was a contentious time, but there's no need for that. There's no need for that. If anybody starts any violence, it's going to be provocateurs. And let me tell you something. In some of the George Floyd protests in Minneapolis, there was video that showed some guy, he clearly was not a George Floyd protester, he clearly was more of a Proud Boy or Boogaloo, walking along calmly, and when he thought no one was looking, break a window just for the heck of it and keep walking. There will be provocateurs, I know that. I know that. I suggested to an assistant district attorney I know the other day that there be a perimeter and a fairly, at a substantial distance from the Fiserv Center. And he didn't say anything, but he sort of nodded and smiled. And I believe there will be a perimeter. There'll be plenty of law enforcement. There'll be plenty of people from all over the country. I think it's terrific. I think it's terrific. Let me tell you something else. The First Amendment, everybody knows, you know, First Amendment provides for separation of church and state. It's defined as no established religion. For freedom of the press, freedom of speech. But there's also a provision in the First Amendment called freedom of assembly and right to petition the government. You have a right to assemble in public, peaceably. You have a right to petition the government, peaceably. In some cases, when they're, especially now in Florida, for Pete's sake, I mean, DeSantis says they have this, they passed this law that, and he's the one who proposed it, that essentially says that if people congregate and there's more than a couple of them, you have some license or title to, even with your car, bump into them. It's very, very imprecisely worded. I think if it ever came to being enforced, a federal judge would enjoin it. But that's disgusting. DeSantis in Florida have absolutely no conception of the First Amendment. The First Amendment is not just separation of church and state. It's not just freedom of speech, freedom of the press. It's also right to petition the government and freedom of assembly. And you know, you can say, well, the Republican Party is a private deal. Well, no, it's not a private deal. Not really. These national conventions are going to nominate somebody who, for all intents and purposes, will be one of two people who is liable, one of two people who is liable to be elected president of the United States. And any political party that says, well, we're a private party, we can do what we want. Remember something. Long time ago in the South, Democratic Party in South Carolina and elsewhere would not let African-American people vote in the primary. They just couldn't vote in the primary. And their argument was, we're a political party. That's what we want. And you know what the federal court said? They said, well, if you were just a private entity, great, you can do what you want, as disgusting as it is. But nomination in this state in the Democratic primary is tantamount to election in the general election. That makes you a quasi-state actor, and therefore you must let everybody vote. It was the right decision. It was a good decision. So if somehow the Republicans say, well, we can't have any demonstrations because we're a private party, the answer is this: no, you're not. In the context of that previous decision in the South, you're really not. Whoever gets your nomination has a very good chance of being president of the United States, can be one of two people. And don't give me this baloney that there are going to be five independent candidates and some idiot somewhere who sticks his name on it and doesn't do anything. It's one of the two major parties. So you're going to be responsible about this. I'm very, very hopeful, guys. I'm very, very hopeful about this. I think that it's great for Wisconsin. You know, the sad thing is this. As a Democrat, we got the Democratic convention here in 2020. And then COVID hit. That was not the fault of anybody. We did a great job getting it. And when I say we, there were a lot of people who did it. Actually, Alex Lazary, who had been a Senate candidate here, did a heck of a job helping to get it in. And he was treasurer of the effort. And that should not be overlooked. That should not be overlooked, his accomplishments. But it was not just he. It was a lot of people. And people like Milwaukee and they like Wisconsin. Now, I'm not naive. I know why the Republicans want to come in here. They want to come in here because Ron Johnson is vulnerable. And we're a swing state, a purple state. And we're in the Midwest. I get it. I get it. And so going to Nashville, which turned them down anyway, you know, that's a red state, borders on Mississippi. I mean, it doesn't give them anything. I get it. But we can still be courteous to the average delegate and all the press. Keep the violence out of it. This is a very, very good thing for the state of Wisconsin. Going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar.
Are open, 844-967-2789. Well, there was a terrific disclosure that just occurred. There's been a report now that Kevin McCarthy, minority leader, hopes to become speaker if the Republicans win in November. And I'm beginning to think it's less and less likely with some of Joe Biden's accomplishments, both getting legislation passed and in Iraq and containing China. Standing up to China, the Red Chinese. Kevin McCarthy, at Kevin McCarthy's direction, the Republican Party has drafted about 500 quote, preservation letters, end quote, to various agencies, the federal government, demanding that they preserve evidence. Now, what does that mean? Let me boil that down for you from a legal point of view. If you file a lawsuit, or you get sued, your client gets sued, or you're about to file a lawsuit, or you think your client is about to be sued, you send a preservation letter to the lawyers for the other side. And you say, in light of present litigation or pending litigation, we demand that you cease destruction of all documents having to do, and then there's a laundry list of topics, and that you preserve them as evidence in this case and for production and discovery. What that does is, and here you had Gableman and Voss destroying documents even after judges told them to preserve them. But in the general, if you're dealing with honest people, if they get a preservation letter like that, and you take their deposition and they go, and I say, well, what about that letter that you wrote to so-and-so? And they go, Yeah, I had a copy of that, but it disappeared. I must have destroyed it. When did you destroy it? If they destroyed it after they got the preservation letter, that's misconduct. And that can lead to sanctions from the judge. And in an extreme case, and it'd have to be repetitious, even having judgment entered for the other side. It's a very serious thing. Now, in this case, what Kevin McCarthy is doing, what the Republicans are doing, is signaling a revenge tour. What's going to happen, and we knew this before, but now it's been confirmed in spades, what's going to happen, Republicans take over. They have been mercilessly pilloried in the January 6th commission, in the impeachment over Ukraine, in the impeachment over January 6th, in all of these inquiries, these commission hearings, and everybody in the country in their living rooms has watched the evidence unfold of criminal conduct. And it's taken a toll on the Republican Party. They apparently think, and this is pathetic, they apparently think that instead of cleaning up their act and throwing out the rotten apples and acting like an honest American party again, the way to do it is to slime the other side, is to hold their own hearings if they have a majority. Slime the other side. Doesn't matter what it's about. So some of these letters have gone, well, to the January 6th Commission, which is fine. They've already said that they're going to launch investigations into Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger about January 6th. Are you kidding me? For what? For standing up to the people in their party who attacked our democracy and wouldn't even vote to confirm Joe Biden as president? Or who now have stood up for the insurrectionists who beat and injured police officers and went up to hang the vice president and murder congressmen and senators. But they're going to have it, and they're going to go up there, and they're going to say, well, Kinzinger and Cheney did a wrong thing by helping convene the commission. And the average, I think they think the average person is going to fall for this. My personal point of view is, if I see something like that, even if that were being done by my own party, I'd be so disgusted, I'd never be with that party again. But they're going to do it. They're going to do it with Fauci, believe it or not. They're going to do it with Biden. They've already said, you know who said it was Jim Jordan. By the way, you know I'm not a fan of Gymnasium Jim G.Y.M. Jordan by a long shot. Do you realize that if the Republicans take the House, he'll be the next chairman of the Judiciary Committee? Chairman, having an awful lot to say about judicial appointments, even though a lot of those are confirmations in the Senate and he's in the House, but an awful lot to say about investigations. And this is an insurrectionist. This is a guy who met with Trump in the White House during the week of Christmas and several others to plan the Green Bay sweep, so to speak, to plan this phony, crooked attack on democracy where they were going to go, well, all right, we have alternate electors. And the Republicans say the Republican electors are the good ones. Democrats say it's the Democrats. Put it to the House. And by the way, the rules for that is each state gets only one vote. So Pelosi can't ram this through. And more states have Republican majorities than Democratic states. So therefore, the Republican wins the presidency. That was the deal. And you go, what? How can more states have Republican majorities? Take Wyoming. It is one Republican congresswoman. Now, it's Liz Cheney. We're fortunate. But there are states that have one congressman, and they're Republicans frequently. They get one vote. California has 55 congressmen. It's Democratic. They get one vote. New York has about 45. They get one vote. Somebody else has two. Maine has two. They get one vote. See what I'm saying? So it goes on. And that was the deal. And this is what Gymnasium Jim G.Y.M. Jordan was orchestrating with Trump. And if the Justice Department hadn't stood up to Trump, that could have succeeded, could have ruined our democracy. And this clown, this venomous clown, would be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And he's the one that would be directing, that would actually be directing these investigations and the impeachment, for instance, of Biden for doing what? And Fauci? And pursuing criminal charges if a Republican ever gets to Attorney General for Fauci. Why? Because they say, well, his mask mandate as vaccine mandates exceeded his authority. And by the way, this thing escaped from a lab in Wuhan. So the Chinese did it, but Fauci, up until the pandemic, had cooperated with the Wisconsin Health, the World Health Organization, which, by the way, are doing that, reduce the SARS effect before, and what you should do, you want third world countries, second world countries to get vaccinated. It was wrong for him to do that, and just drag him, like the Benghazi thing with Hillary Clinton. It never went anywhere. But if you see somebody on, quote, trial, end quote, so to speak, for weeks, you go, well, where the smoke, there's fire. So 500 preservation letters have already been drafted. They will just plug in the date that the Republicans take over in January, if they do. And that's why it's essential that they never take over while their party is as dysfunctional and anti-democratic and, frankly, fascistic as it is. It attacks democracy, not the whole party, not Liz Cheney, not Adam Kinzinger, not Peter Meyer, not a lot of the people. But that's the lay of the land. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Major piece of legislation passed the Senate. It's on the way to pass the House, and Joe Biden will sign it. Quite frankly, this has, in my view, made it much more likely that the Democrats are going to do much better in the midterms than people thought, and that Joe Biden is looking especially strong for re-election in 2024. So what's the legislation? You know that Joe had already gotten past hard infrastructure. Remember the hard infrastructure? That was the one that was going to repair roads, airports, water systems, that kind of thing. And it passed. It passed with 17 Republican votes, 67 votes passing it. That was terrific. And then he passed gun legislation after Uvalde. In my view, it didn't go anywhere near far enough, but it gave a few things. It let people investigate more thoroughly people under 21 who were buying guns. And there were some other reforms as well and some money put to stopping this kind of violence. It was something. But now they passed what we had been calling soft infrastructure, which has now been renamed the Inflation Reduction Act. And, you know, a lot of these bills, and this happens with the Democratic and the Republican side, they get these Orwellian names. I mean, you know, that sometimes they're exactly the opposite of what you really think they are. That's not the case here. This will certainly reduce the budget deficit. It's unlikely to reduce inflation immediately, but it certainly helps by reducing the deficit. And here's what it does. It's the soft infrastructure with some stuff carved out. It's intended, and it will raise something like $739 billion in revenue, tax revenue, not with necessarily new taxes on the average person. And in fact, not with any new taxes on anybody. But back in 2006, George W. Bush and the Republican Party got together and they said, how can we make sure that higher income people don't necessarily have to pay taxes the way they currently do? And you know what they did? They started to defund the IRS. They defunded the IRS, and they had so few auditors, forensic accountants, forensic lawyers, and accounting type lawyers that most people didn't get audited anymore. And when people talk about recovering fraud and waste, I always yawn, or I used to yawn. I go, okay, fraud and waste. There is a lot of fraud and waste, and it's precisely because the Republican Party defunded the IRS. Biden is now funding the IRS, hiring several hundred new forensic accountants and lawyers and paying them much higher wages than before, paying them wages similar to the wages that the vice president gets, which is something under $200,000 a year. And you may say, that's a lot of money. Yes, it is a lot of money. Try going, go to a lawyer's office sometime, a real expert in accounting, real expert in law and tax law. See what you pay. Is it really quite a bargain? The estimates are that over 10 years, this will raise something like $1 trillion. This will go massively towards reducing the deficit. It's very, very good. The other thing it's going to do, it's going to extend health care coverage for millions of people, poor people that are about to expire. It's also going to let us negotiate with big pharmaceutical companies because of bulk purchases. Think about this. There's no insurance company, no employer that buys more medications than Medicare, or Medicare and Medicaid combined, right? I mean, you know, think about it. How many people in the country are that way? Because the Republicans passed a law, it says that up till now, we can't ask for a bulk discount. So they go, well, how much do you want for that pill? And they say $7 a pill. And we go, well, you know, we're going to be buying about 100 million of them. $7 a pill. Any insurance company, any employer, say, if I'm going to buy that many pills, you're going to give me a break, Jack. And they'd be glad to do it because retail prices are set basically on onesies and twosies sales. But if you're guaranteed a massive sale, you're going to get your return, all of your costs, and a healthy profit. This bill now will let us do that, negotiate with big pharmacy companies for these bulk discounts. It will also raise some taxes on corporations who don't pay any taxes whatsoever. It also has a tax on buybacks. Now, right now, if you own stocks, occasionally you'll get an offer from the company to buy it back. And if they buy it back, it would be at whatever the going rate was plus a little premium. They do that. That's not a productive way for them to use their money. If they have cash, we'd much rather see them hire more people, invest in equipment, invest in strategic planning. You know, buying back stock doesn't really do anything. This will impose a fairly small tax on buybacks. Now, there are a couple of scandalous things in this, and I want to lay them right out on the table. And their names are Sinema and Manchin. And when I'm done with what I'm about to say, you're going to see how conflicted I am about whether we should even support these people going forward. But considering the alternative, we may have no choice. Here's the deal. First of all, Wall Street got to Sinema. One of the provisions in this bill was the elimination of carried interest treatment for hedge funds and venture capital firms. And you're sitting on your couch with a cup of coffee going, what? You yawn. And you tune out. Well, listen, I'm going to tell it to you in ducks and bunnies, okay? You pay income tax. I pay income tax. Goes up to what, 39%, depending on your income? You pay income tax. Hedge fund owners and venture capitalists don't pay income tax. What? You go, what? Yeah. They hire the most expensive lobbyists in the world, thousands of them. They swarm the Capitol. I made a proposal once when I ran for office. Everybody laughed at it, and I'm going to make that proposal again. Every registered lobbyist that goes on the Capitol grounds should be required to wear a yellow sport jacket, men and women. Why do I say that? How many times have you seen a senator walk down a marble polished hallway with 10 guys in suits around them and women in business suits? And you think, that's an important guy. He must have a lot of other senators and congressmen with him. They all should be wearing yellow jackets. They're lobbyists. If you saw him that, you'd think it was like a bumblebee coming down. You'd see 10 yellow jackets following this guy, and you'd say, this guy is being pursued by lobbyists. Well, that's what happened. And they came up with a very clever thing. There are two industries in particular that frequently don't have to pay income tax, And that's people who drill oil wells and then paper companies who plant timber. Why is that? Because the idea in the tax code is if you get a paycheck or a salary, it's fixed, you know what it is, you pay income tax. If you drill an oil well, you can drill 50 wells and get 49 dry wells and then one gusher. If you had to pay income tax on the gusher, all the deductions and depreciation in the world don't begin to give you the incentive to do 49 dry holes. If a paper company plants 1 million trees, they don't get to cut them down for 10 years or 15 years. Carried interest is nothing more than really capital gains. It's half of the income tax, and it's done to reward risk. Hedge funds and venture capital firms have no risk. The hedge funds get 2% of everything you invest with them, even if they do a lousy job, even if they lose your money. And then they get 1.5% of anything they bring in over the S&P 500 rate. So they take chances. They buy derivatives. They short stocks. And frequently they take a bath and they still get 2%. If it's $1 billion, they get $20 million just for doing that and having a few computers and typewriters and secretaries in Midtown Manhattan. And if they happen to get a good return, it's more than the S&P, they also get 1.5% over that. That's not risk. That's not risk. That's shooting fish in a barrel. Cinema demanded the deck come out because they got to her. They got to her. And they got to her in one other thing, which had to do with a corporate minimum tax for corporations that pay no tax at all. Got to go to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. I'm going to get back to this right after the break. This really bothers me, and I'm going to tell you a little more. Back after the break. Director, lines are open, 844-967-2789. Getting back to Manchin, Sinema, the soft infrastructure bill. Soft infrastructure bill. So what is it that Manchin did? Well, in soft infrastructure, he held out for anti-environmental things that they had to cave in on him, but at least he went somewhat along with the bill. But in another vote, he voted with the Republicans to cancel the Biden administration rule for environmental review of infrastructure projects. Remember the hard infrastructure? Remember the roads, airports, bridges? Remember that? Water systems? Well, you have to have an environmental review, obviously. You want to pour toxins into fresh water, that kind of thing. There's a way to get, you know, not do that. Trump had weakened it. Biden strengthens it. Manchin voted with the Republicans, leaving the Democrats only with 49 votes. And therefore, the Trump rules stand. There's nothing on the environment that Manchin will do that's decent at all, in my view. He voted with him. So Kamala Harris can't even come in. If there's 50 on the one side and 49 on the other because Manchin jumps in, nothing you can do. And he and Sinema play good cop, bad cop. I think they talk. I mean, let me be blunt. So this time he says, okay, you take a dive on taxes, and I'll say I'm for the tax stuff. And then I'll take a dive on environment, and you say you're for it. That's what's going on. That's what's going on. What's the difference between the Trump and the Biden environmental policy? Trump said that they are limited to an environmental review of an infrastructure project limited to what is, quote, reasonably foreseeable, end quote. Biden's demand was that they take into account anything that is directly, indirectly, or cumulatively likely or foreseeable. Give me an example. Scott Walker here in this state, we have a terrible problem in central Wisconsin with drilling these deep wells where they suck up hundreds of thousands of fresh water and lakes dry up. They're sucking out the groundwater in central Wisconsin, pouring forever chemicals and water elsewhere. And the Republicans passed a rule that said you can't look at cumulative effect on the water supply. You only sort of microscopically look at one thing. That's stupid. Are you kidding me? This is our groundwater. If our groundwater is disappearing or full of cancer, I want to know about it. I don't want a guy to go, well, I looked at this and I looked at that and that seemed okay and I didn't put it together. That's like Mueller with the Trump investigation. He didn't look at finance. He said, they didn't tell me to look at finances. But what happens if the Ruskies were giving him hundreds of millions of dollars? You think maybe he was playing footsie with the Ruskies? They didn't ask me to look at that. This is the kind of baloney that's going on. This is what Manchin went along with. He went along with Trump on this. So all they have to say, what's reasonably foreseeable? They yawn, they stretch, they look out. Well, that's not reasonably foreseeable. Biden wanted them, the scientists, to go, here is the direct result. But here's the indirect result. And here is their cumulative result. Absolutely, that's what you should do in environment. Manchin stuck the knife in. Here's another way both of them stick the knife in. This is unbelievable. Biden and Schumer had put in a provision that you had to cap insulin payments to $35 a month. Right now, some people are being charged hundreds of dollars. They can't afford it. There are people in this country who are not getting insulin. And, you know, I have friends who are diabetics. You can die from that. They can't afford it, and they don't apply for it right or whatever. So $35. There's a person, in this case a woman, called a Senate parliamentarian. The Republicans complained, and she looked at it, and she goes, well, that cannot be resolved just with 50 votes. It needs 60 votes. It's subject to the filibuster because this is not just budget reconciliation. This affects private industry, even private companies. Let me tell you something. She can be overridden by a simple majority. They can't filibuster an override of her decision. Manchin Sinema won't override the parliamentarian, a woman who's an employee, for Pete's sake. They go, no, we have to have a filibuster. Moscow Mitch filibusters it. And then, sneaky dog that he is, he goes, well, I'll tell you what. We have seven Republicans who are really vulnerable in this time, so they can vote to override the filibuster. I give them permission. So 57 votes. And this is Manchin Sinema going along with it, knowing that it'll never get to 60, and they're the ones that insisted on this. And it failed 57 to 43, even though 57 was the majority because it took 60. People can still be charged hundreds of bucks a month for insulin who can't afford it. Now, what about this? I'm tempted to say never give a dollar to Sinema or Manchin, never vote for him, get him out. The problem is getting a Democrat, another Democrat in West Virginia or Arizona. In West Virginia could be well nigh impossible right now, and Arizona could be very difficult. Mark Kelly is running against this guy, Blake McMaster, who Blake McMaster, the Republican nominee, is a Trump Republican election denier. He's also the one who said that those rioters were FBI agents. He said that. The people that beat up the cops, and we're going to hang Mike Pence for FBI agents. He's a line sack, and this guy is a Republican nominee in Arizona. And Mark Kelly is in a close race with him. If Sinema gets defeated, what are the Democrats going to stand up? So you have to decide. Do you suck it up? Manchin and Sinema will do one thing correctly. They'll vote for Schumer or our majority leader. Otherwise, Moscow Mitch should have it and shut it down. And they'll play good cop, bad cop, and sneak around. But ultimately, we'll get a few things. That is what is sad about politics. It's the way sausage is made. And you know who one of the greatest practitioners of sausage making was in the history of our country? It was our greatest president, Abraham Lincoln. When Abraham Lincoln had proposed the 13th Amendment to even to abolish slavery, that wasn't going to pass. He personally brought in Republican congressmen. In those days, they were the liberal party, the Democrats were the segregationists. And he'd say, what will it take to get your vote? The guy goes, I'd like the postmastership in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, or I would like to be inspector of tariffs. Because in those days, which they don't anymore, the postmaster and the inspector of tariffs, customs, got a slice. They took a slice. You know, stamps, tariffs, that kind of thing. They became wealthy. And he did it. And he got the votes to abolish slavery. So before you get on your high horse and go, well, Manchin Sinema, you know, we're going to sniff at this and we're going to throw them out. Maybe. But I think this is an example of why we need to get 52 majority or 53 majority. But we need, we're going to need a Senate seat in Wisconsin and in Pennsylvania and in Georgia and in Arizona and in New Hampshire and in Nevada. Precisely for this reason, because we have, these are not Democrats, really. They're jackalopes, or, you know, they're not Republican or Democrat. They go both ways. They gave us a little bit on this stuff, but all they had to do was vote and say, we override the Senate parliamentarian. We want this in budget reconciliation. Insulin is limited to 35 a month. By the way, 35 bucks a month gives a very healthy little profit to these companies. I mean, 35 bones a month, they've already developed it. It's not like there's any new kinds of insulin coming out. And they just make it in bulk and they can sell it. And 35 a month is about 400 a year. I mean, that's still a lot of money to somebody who is, say, on a Social Security check of 1100 a month or something. And no, now they're going to pay hundreds a month. And some people, sadly, go, well, you know, I'm just not going to buy insulin this month. You can't do that. I mean, what happens is it eats your pancreas. And it's a nasty way to die. It's a very, very nasty way to die. The one little hope I have, and I think this is a, you know, a fantastic development. I'll throw it out here. There was a CPAC conference. That's the Conservative Political Action Conference. Every nut in the world is there. Matt Gaetz gave an interview to Steve Bannon at it, blasting Kevin McCarthy. Quote, he said, Kevin McCarthy should not be the leader of the Republican Congress. He lives in the swamp. He's part of the established Republican Party. There is a dramatic split in the Republican Party. And we see it with the attacks on Voss. We see it on the attacks on Kevin McCarthy. This could have a beneficial effect. A lot of Republican voters, especially in the suburbs around Milwaukee, can look at this and go, I want some stability. I want some normalcy here. What are these clowns doing? And it could induce them to be dispirited and stay home or to vote for the Democrats. And I'm hoping and I think that that may be what happened. But here you have Matt. Now, Matt Gaetz right now is under investigation for trafficking. How this guy runs for re-election and probably will win, what kind of constituents does he have? They don't have any Republicans in West Florida who go, yeah, we want a Republican. We want a conservative, but we'd like a guy who's not being investigated for trafficking. Is that too high a bar? This idiot, this moron, and he attacks Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy is going to be beat up on by the nuts, and there's a lot of nuts in his party. But the question is, when he squeezes out people like Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and turns like a dog on them, are there a lot of others are going to go, we need somebody a little different. And this guy may think I'm going to be speaker by betraying the country, and he ain't going to be speaker. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. There's a lot more after the break.
My love is strong, and it pushes me onward. Down off the hill to Felina I go. Off to my right, I see five mounted cowboys.